Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Steve Iacovelli, aka the Gay Leadership Dude. Dr. Steve has been in leadership, learning and development, change management, and diversity and inclusion consulting space pretty much his whole career, which is about 25 years. In his consulting experience, he's seen some leaders completely excel in their effectiveness and some completely crash and burn due to their lack of competence and leadership skills. Steve's desire was to help both types of leaders become more effective through coaching, formal and informal training, and just generally being there to support their leadershipiness. It's Steve's brand to come out and acknowledge the role he wants to take to give back to the LGBTQ plus community and awesome allies, to serve as a lightning rod of sorts, to start a movement, to grow LGBTQ plus leaders and allies, even more, to be even more effective in a consistent, thoughtful, and mindful manner, especially those up and coming leaders within the broader movement for equality and fairness for all LGBTQ plus people and well beyond. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Steve.
Thank you, Dana. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on and just talk to somebody who's kind of working in a different lens and you know, how you can support educators and some suggestions you have for educators that we'll talk about on today's show. But tell me a little bit about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I really kind of thought long and hard about this one. And I think it's, you know, there's been several points in my career. Matter of fact, in some of the change management workshops we do, there's this great activity, it's called the Lifeline. And you kind of plot your highs and lows. And I was kind of reflecting on that particular activity. And I think oddly enough, one of the lowest points was when I was getting my doctorate. Mm-hmm. Shocker for some people listening who might have felt the same, but I was trying to figure out how to get beyond the coursework to the book report to applying that to my world. My doctorate's actually in instructional technology and distance education, which, you know, is very timely right now, but this is back in 2005-ish. So it was a little bit different landscape. And so it was really trying to figure out how to crawl out from that monotony of getting through, you know, the hoops and all that fun stuff. Also, while still working full-time at Disney Cruise Line. And, you know, even like I was an internal consultant. I'd go and sail on board the ships, do like these awesome classes and coachings. I would take my box of research with me, sit it in my stateroom or my cabin and think in between classes, you know, I'll go and sit in my cabin and write my dissertation, which is not a really good and conducive environment to write a academic pursuit, but it worked. I finally got my way where I needed to go. And now I'm Dr. Steve ever since.
Yeah, it just makes me think, like, I've been on several cruises when they've been running and we hope to get on another cruise this fall, you know, and I'm just thinking for somebody who works on a cruise, you know, you guys have like, I don't know, 12 to 16 hour days as it is. Yeah. And, you know, depending what your job is, but then like trying to finish research right in those pockets of time in between.
Well, luckily I was kind of going back and forth. I worked quote unquote shoreside and I'd go sail on the ships every few weeks. So it was, but you know, it's a cruise ship. I mean, if anyone listening has been on a cruise ship, it is absolutely not where you want to sit down and like start like going through your analysis of different ways that people like have self-efficacy for computer engagement and all that fun stuff. So.
Yes, and the research part and, you know, just getting everything aligned and put on paper for your PhD. But, you know, you were determined, you got that done. And that leads into my next question. How did you get to this point in your career? So, you know, you have your PhD in educational technology and your MS is in educational policy. So now you're working as a consultant and, you know, working with leaders. But so kind of that windy road to where you are.
So actually I started out as math education back in the day in undergrad. And even before I got on campus, I decided I didn't want to be a math teacher. So I went into communications. And so I went to Millersville University, very, very known for teacher education. And I'm from a family of teachers and educators. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I made my way through and decided that I wanted to work for Mickey. So I packed up, drove from Philadelphia down to Orlando, Florida, got a job, did not like it, back up to Philly to make a story not as long, found found myself in a couple different roles, but I started in the corporate training world. I was actually doing software training. Okay. And it was really fascinating because it's when I started trying to understand how adults learn. You know, in this case, we're doing more technical skills training, but really kind of understanding the application in the corporate setting, but from an educational kind of perspective. And then I decided I want to pursue my master's degree in educational policy and leadership. Mm-hmm. So I went to Ohio State and I was going to be a higher ed administrator. I got halfway through that program and said, I don't want to work in higher ed the next several years. But what I loved about the program, though, it was very shades of organizational consulting, you know, human resources kind of thing. So I ended up getting my degree and I, oddly enough, came back to Orlando and I was working again in training. But this time it started changing more toward the soft skills, if you will, kind of more the using the leadership and organizational development stuff that I learned and really applying that to the workplace. And that's kind of where I stayed in that swim lane ever since. Worked with a couple really cool organizations, was like I said, was with Disney for a while, was with IBM for a while. Tried my hand right after I got my doctorate at being a full-time professor. Wasn't my jam. I'm more of a business kind of dude. And so and then in 2008 I decided, you know what, let me kind of start my own gig and see what happens. And we'd actually started it part-time as a side gig, a side hustle, actually, while I was at Disney with a colleague. And then 2008 or early 2008, I said, yeah, let's make a go of this as a full-time venture. And, you know, knock on wood, here I am.
Yeah. That's a lot to lead you to where you are now. And we kind of have that in common, and that my doctorate is in educational leadership, but also organizational management. So kind of looking a little bit at that HR aspect. And I find that interesting, you know, working with the soft skills. And, you know, that's something that as a leader in a school, you look at when you want to, you know, develop your teachers and put them in more leadership positions. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of teachers who might want to leave education, you know, they have a soft skills from communications with family and, you know, the organizational skills from lesson planning that can be transferred to other
fields
as well. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, whenever I'm, you know, cause a lot of what we do at Top Dog Learning Group is instructional design. I'm like, well, this is curriculum development. It's just a different spin on it. And your target audience is differently, but it's kind of the same skill set.
I wanted to ask you, since you work so much with leaders and, you know, help form great leaders, what's the secret of great leadership and the lessons that you've learned around educational equity and leadership?
Yeah, it's funny because when my latest book came out, Pride Leadership, and I know we'll have a chat about that in a few moments, I was doing a media interview and the gentleman asked a very similar question. He's like, can you tell me the secret to leadership? I'm like, you know what, I can. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, you ready? Said, I could have taken my 356-page book, put it into one page with one word on it. And do you want to guess what that word would have been? Do you want to take a guess?
Be yourself.
Close.
Yeah.
Trust. Yeah. So the key to any, when you look at all the competencies that are out there, you know, and all the books about, you know, effective leadership and all that good stuff, when you boil everything down to, it's about trust. Building relationships is about trust. Communication is about trust. When you're being your authentic self in the workplace, you're instilling trust from those around you. So really the best leaders are the ones who cultivate the trust with their team, with their organization, with their customers, with their students, with whomever. So I just saved somebody a lot of money in an MBA program.
Yeah. And I've, you know, gone through several trainings where, you know, building that school culture and, you know, invoking trust in your staff, right? Because it comes from the top, right? If you have a principal leading a school and the staff trusts that principal, that's also going to trickle down to the students, right? The school culture is going to really, you know, do more better as a result of that trust from the top. Totally. So a lot of teachers are looking to find materials to make their classrooms more inclusive in terms of equity through the racial lens, but also we want to think about just choosing materials not only through the racial lens, but also LGBTQ plus materials, whether or not you teach science, social studies, math, or English. And I taught English, and you know, there's a great website I go to that has materials that are available, but it's called Teaching Tolerance. But what are some suggestions that you might have, just maybe not so much curriculum materials, but just making your classroom more inclusive?
So I think I would boil it down to three things that teachers educators in general can mm-hmm. do to build a more inclusive environment for everybody. The first mm-hmm. is language. Mm-hmm. So what's the language that's being used? Talking about, you know, being an English teacher. Mm-hmm. And it's not just necessarily the words that I use as, you know, the one in front of the room or mm-hmm. in front of the screen mm-hmm. or whatever is appropriate these days, but it's really thinking through, you know, and it could be little things like instead of saying, oh, him, when you're talking to a generic yeah. entity, what about mm-hmm. they? Mm-hmm. When you're having conversations about family, what kinds of families are you describing? Mm-hmm. When you're using the concepts of gender, are you using a binary this or that, or are you being more inclusive of those conversations? So starts with language. The next mm-hmm. is starts with images and assets. I mean, I know so many teachers who make just beautiful rooms showing all sorts of different ways to be inclusive. What are those images that mm-hmm. you're putting or aren't putting out within that space? And now that can be your virtual space too. You know, if you are teaching online, what's behind you that's mm-hmm. that's showing your inclusivity or lack thereof? Mm-hmm. You know, and it could be something rainbow mm-hmm. affiliated in order to show that inclusive space, or a Black Lives Matter sign or something small mm-hmm. just to show that you're being inclusive and you're a safe space. And then I think the next is so we have language, we have kind of the visuals, if you will, and I have to say it's the attitude, and mm-hmm. so it's watching yourself as that person within that space, and you know, we talk about unconscious bias in a lot of the work mm-hmm. that I do. I always flip that around to be consciously inclusive. So mm-hmm. what are the other ways besides language and images that you can include others within the space, you know, and it could mm-hmm. be something as simple as understanding the true definition of diversity, which is mm-hmm. the similarities and differences between people. But what does that mean? Well, that's well beyond not just, I mean, obviously, the definitions I use are by Gordon Schwartz and Rowe, these two amazing women who created this five-layered model. And, you know, one of the places that they go is internal dimensions, which is, mm-hmm. you know, race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, physical ability. It's kind of what most organizations say, oh, we're divorced. Of course we are diverse. Mm-hmm. We're really inclusive. We mm-hmm. have blank month. Well, that's a good start, but that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And so it's also considering things like, in the case of adults, at least, you know, parental status, marital mm-hmm. status, educational attainment, geographical location, physical appearance. Mm-hmm. These are also all indicators of our individuality, our diversity as humans. Mm-hmm. And so being mindful of that, you know, I often talk, you know, it's important to include the big and the small for diversity, like mm-hmm. handedness. Left hand, right hand, you know, and mm-hmm. and are you being exclusive for those left-handers? And that's a minor thing, but you know, that's mm-hmm. also a way to show that you're being consciously inclusive as a leader is to just think beyond the mm-hmm. quote unquote typical and what makes us each different and unique humans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a good staff getting to know you activity at the beginning of the school year is always like, define who you are, define your culture, right? And there's a lot of, people that don't think they really have much as part of their yeah. culture, but, you know, define what makes you unique. And then, yep. You know, you share that out and then you figure out, well, that, you know, this, everybody has their own culture, right? Yeah, and absolutely. Even something as, you know, minimal as you're saying, left-handedness, like I'm left-handed, I don't really care or think much about it, right?
Yeah, but that makes you different. Yeah. I mean, that makes you have a different perspective on the world, especially back in the day when there would only be those right-handed desks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that created a perspective through your individual lens, and that's important to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, same with, you know, I again, these aren't meant to be small and diminished, but I also think about my friends who are colorblind. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. especially when you're an adult learning, you know, mm-hmm. you never do stuff like, oh, here's a green chart versus a red chart. Hello, mm-hmm. that's not really inclusive. So it's the big stuff. Of course, absolutely, we want to acknowledge race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender. Yes, of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. But a smart leader, it doesn't forget the other things mm-hmm. because they are also creating our unique lens as humans.
Mm-hmm. So let's transition a little bit and talk about the Bennett scale. And you have that that you can put on the screen.
Pretty little graphic.
That, you know, as we're talking about the colors. So, you know, it has the colors of the rainbow.
Of course it does. Yeah, leadership, dude. Of course it does.
So talk to me a little bit about kind of those spectrums going from denial to integration and how educators can be fully integrated and integrate their students into that inclusive environment.
Yeah, Dr. Dr. Milton Bennett, so I can't take credit for this one. It's Dr. Milton Bennett in the 80s created this scale. And I just always loved it. And I actually created this specific graphic because I couldn't find a good one. I was doing a keynote for a corporate partner. And I wanted to describe the stages of inclusivity. And so that's why I created it. I'm like, hey, the Gay Leadership Dude, of course I'll use a rainbow. That's awesome. But the idea here is that people say, oh, we're inclusive. Great. How much? Mm-hmm, and that's kind of what the Bennett scale looks at. So, it goes from like all the way to the negative, which is of course denial. If you're like, there's no other cultures but mine, and that kind of very, very single-mindedness, if you will, all the way to what's called integration, which is where, I understand that I have my perspective. There's so many other beautiful, different cultural perspectives out there. And culture can mean a lot of different things. It's not just, I'm from this place or I'm from that place. It's all of our different walks of life, if you will, or experiences in life, probably a better inclusive phrase. So it's really understanding that and kind of in the middle. Right at the middle line where we start getting from the, you're not doing it as great as you could to, yes, you're on the right track. On the kind of more negative side of that, what we call, or what Bennett calls, ethnocentric stages, which is like meaning it's about me and my culture, my experience. The last one right before you cross that awesome threshold is what's called minimization. Mm-hmm. And that's saying, I might be slightly understanding that other people have some different experiences. What I need to do to get over that hump is to understand the importance of different cultures. And so once you get that, then you've slid into the beginning of the what he calls ethno-relative stages. And that's the first one is looking at what's called acceptance. And that's where you see a lot of organizations, of course we accept there's other cultures. Great, that's a good start. And then adoption, that's really starting to not expand my personal worldview, maybe start to behave culturally appropriate in different situations or scenarios. And then you get up to what's called integration, where a person's existence is expanded to include both moments in and out of different cultures. For example, and I'm always evolving as we all are, but I am a cultural magpie, and I realized about myself, I've had the pleasure, the good fortune of living in a couple different cultures outside of the US. And I know I lived in France for a while. And when you hear me talk about the LGBT plus Q+ community, I don't say plus anymore. I say plus because that's how French say it. It just sounds cooler anyway. But everything from when I worked at a cruise line, there was 52 nationalities around me and I would hear different things. They'd celebrate different things. And so now all the Australian holidays are part of my world, which I love. It's kind of fun. And I say it went pear-shaped. And so I just kind of pull these different things or threads together, but also know that, when I'm in a situation, I need to think about how I am not being pulling my own ethnocentricity into the mix, but really acclimating and appreciating kind of those around me.
And I think, I've taught world languages and I've lived in France and Canada and Norway as well. And, Yeah. And I think that, for Americans a lot of time, once you have traveled or lived abroad, your eyes are so much more open. Right. Yeah. And, I think it's interesting. You celebrate those holidays from Australia. Right. I mean, I think about the holidays in Norway or, some of the French holidays. Right. Exactly. So
we celebrate Bastille Day here in our house with the flag. Yeah, absolutely.
Why not? It gives you a chance to eat French food.
Absolutely. But that even happens here in the States. I'm from the Philadelphia area. Of course, my family grew up with used guys and all that good stuff. I lived in Central Florida for just about 25 years. But what's funny is I didn't realize it, but when I moved down here, used guys went away. And now it's y'all. And because it's the South. But the thing I love about having, again, assimilated that particular piece of language, it is much more inclusive. Because, y'all means y'all, and that's it. Where you guys, there's some gender associated with that. And that could be for some a little bit like, oh, wait a minute. So just little things like that, again, going back to the concept of being more consciously inclusive, back to the language, that's a way to think about it. And it's culturally appropriate here in the South.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about just language in general, like when you're speaking French, right? And like, I would teach, you know, il plural, right? Well, guys and girls, but, you know, how can we be more inclusive with the plural form of they, right? So kind of going back to that, but let's transition. And, you know, for a situation with an educator who is trying to support a student who is coming out, or maybe a student who is transitioning and is not accepted by family, how would you suggest that educator go forth and, you know, because be a very young student or a student who's about to graduate from high school?
I think with any leader, and I'm going to pull up the graphic. These are the six competencies I talk about in my book, which I know we're going to talk about in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Empathy can never, ever, 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 ever be understated, whether you're leading a classroom or leading a Fortune 200 company. Having empathy as a leader is one of the biggest gifts you can do. So what does empathy look like? It's, if you're familiar with emotional intelligence, Daniel Goleman, if you're not, Google that because it's really cool stuff. But emotional intelligence is not just about your understanding of your emotional state, but that of those you're with. You know, in this case, could be a student. And so it's really just, you know, showing empathy is showing caring. It's just, it could be just simple as listening and listening to acknowledge, like, you know, that's gotta be really hard for you. But then also with that particular student, because of their developmental, you know, perspective and where they're at, what are the resources that they need? And as that educator, connect them with the right resources, whether it be within the district, within your school, or outside of the school with a PFLAG or whatever that looks like. And I think that's the smart strategy is to show compassion and then find the right support. And that is also you, educator, who's listening to this. But for, you know, maybe deeper things, especially when you have the layers of family who aren't accepting of the authenticity of that particular student, there might be some other nuances that can be leveraged at that moment in time. Like I said, for PFLAG, I know here in Central Florida, we have Zebra Coalition, which focuses on supporting LGBTQ plus youth. So find those instances. And if they're not within your geographical area, there is gorgeous communities online. You can find the support there as well.
And what would you suggest to teachers and principals who want to be more inclusive leaders in their building that feel like maybe they really haven't shown much inclusivity until, you know, recently?
You know, a really simple strategy that I make sure that my corporate partners do, and any school can do this as well. Think about pronoun usage. Mm-hmm. You know, you see in my Zoom here, it says, you know, Dr. Steve Iacovelli, he, him. Mm-hmm. Why do I do that? Because that shows that I'm normalizing the concept of sharing what my pronouns are, so you don't have to guess what they are. Mm-hmm. And as you know, every keynote, every conversation, every workshop I do, I go to my intro slide, which I'll bring it up right here. And you notice at the bottom corner of my screen, it says he, him, his. And I'll put that out there. It's a half a second acknowledgement to my trans brothers and sisters out there that, you know what, I hear you, I see you, I'm here to support you, and let's keep the conversation moving. Those types of little, and I wouldn't say they're red flags, they're like little rainbow flags or whatever, is a great way to show that I'm an ally, in this case of my trans brothers and sisters. Clearly though, if I'm introducing myself as the gay leadership dude, there's some things you already know about me pretty darn quickly, I'm gay, I self-identify as a dude, and I like leadership. That's awesome. But, you know, that is not always the case, and hasn't been always the case. And so, you know, owning yourself, being authentic, but showing in just something simple as the pronouns, that's a great thing to show that you're there to support. You know, it could be also be something like, you know, having a little sign in your virtual classroom or face-to-face classroom of hashtag BLM. You know, to support of the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, again, all those types of things, the students are looking for those signs, those artifacts within the space. And when they see them, they latch onto them very quickly in a good way. And so anything you can do from a classroom to a school to a district perspective to show those safe cues, by all means, please do it.
Great suggestion. And, you know, I like how, you know, even on a visual, like you're showing there and, you know, having that in your Zoom, you know, just those little things, it doesn't take long, right? So what's your experience and perspective for LGBTQ plus leadership in terms of student leaders who want to be more involved in their school, for example, be a senior class president or student body president? And, you know, they might not be out yet, or, you know, they're maybe just not very outgoing. I mean, just kind of, you know, cause you work a lot with adults and just leadership in general, but for students who are kind of, you know, in that phase where they're still finding themselves, and they do want to take on leadership opportunities.
I can't underestimate the amount of learning I had in all of those extracurricular activities, both in my K through 12 world, as well as college and beyond, and understanding those opportunities to, one, just get my own leadership skin and figure that out. And then two, and I think more importantly, have that opportunity to fail in a safe way. Because, you know, if I'm running the yearbook team, or I'm starting a gay straight alliance in my school, or head of the captain of my athletic team, or, you know, the lead in the theater, whatever. I mean, that's an opportunity to show leadership and to, one, see how that fits for me and try that on. Mm-hmm. And then two, if you can find that mentor, that educator, that maybe that it's even that senior leader within the student body to kind of leverage and I want to say sponge onto their experience, but, you know, get that partnership with them to see if they can share their leadership perspective. And instead of like stumbling is not a bad thing, but all the way, you know, leverage their experience and say, you know, hey, what advice do you have for me? What can you guide me on? What are some tips for me to be successful in this new leadership role that I've taken on?
Yeah. And that's always a great idea to learn from those who are kind of already been there and, you know, who can guide you. Let's talk a little bit now about your book, Pride Leadership, and how that might help educators who would like to read it, and, you know, what kind of aspects it has that kind of would help teachers and leaders.
So when I was starting to write the book, I was actually at a conference, and it was actually the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, the first time I went. And I'm sitting in it right before a session, kind of sorting business cards, and there's a woman next to me doing the same thing, and struck up a conversation, and she's like, "What do you do?" I'm like, "Consulting, blah, blah, blah. How about you?" She's like, "Well, I'm a publisher." I'm like, "You know, there's a book in my head that needs to come out." She's like, "Let's get that book out of there." And so that's how I forged my relationship with Jen from Publisher Purpose Press. And I was just going to go down the path of writing a quote unquote generic leadership book. You know, I've been in this space for the vast majority of my career and worked with like thousands of leaders throughout the years. And you see patterns of behavior for, like you said, for those who are rocking and rolling, those who are crashing and burning. And, you know, the qualitative research in me starts kicking through. And then I'm starting to organize my thoughts to do the outline of the book. And then do you remember the show Sex and the City? Okay, so Carrie Bradshaw would sit down to her little computer, and she's like, "I couldn't help but wonder," and that kind of went into my head at one point. And you know, I'm watching all the. I do a lot of volunteer work with various LGBT focused organizations, social justice things of that nature. And so I started, because leadership's on the top of my mind, I'm watching all of my other queer leaders do their thing, and then I couldn't help but wonder, is there something about the quote unquote gay experience that allows us to flex our leadership muscles differently? It's not to say that queer leaders are better than straight ones. No, if anyone's listening, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that the opportunities might be a little bit different to kind of exercise those. So, for example, I kind of land on these six leadership competencies in Pride Leadership: authenticity, courage, empathy, communication, relationships, and culture. And these are the six that, regardless of your sexual orientation, are rock star awesome things to know to be a more effective leader. For example, authenticity. Well, studies show, I mean, you can talk to Brené Brown's and all those cool folks, that if I'm showing my authentic self in the workplace as a leader, people will gravitate toward me. Hey, guess what? They're going to trust me more because I'm bringing my true self to the space. We'll now put that through the queer lens. If I'm an out man or out woman or a trans person being my authentic self in the workplace, how much more authentic can I be? Yeah. And that's kind of where I kind of take the position in Pride Leadership, that these are important for any leader to know. And oh, hey, LGBTQ blue person, you've already been playing with these, whether you know it or not, let me just tell you that. And the thing that I find really fun though is, you know, while of course, there's cheeky dad jokes, all that stuff, you know, some fun humor. But when I got the first piece of feedback from anyone else in the universe besides myself to read it, which was of course my editor, Heather, which I think is fun, Heather the editor. But anyway, she's like, "Okay, Steve, I have feedback for you." And I'm like, "Oh no." And she's like, I'm not your target audience. I'm a white cisgendered straight woman. I'm like, okay. She's like, this is the book I wanted during my MBA program. I'm like, what? And she's like, she goes, it is, she's like, it's so funny. It's very approachable. Mm-hmm. You have great stories, but it's rooted in very solid research. I'm like, of course it is. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd. She's like, well, no, that's what I liked about it. And so I think that's kind of the big takeaway that I really discovered is, you know, I've turned this into like an 8-week online training program. It's an hour keynote. It's an 8-hour, you know, super deep dive for clients, you know, all around these same things about ultimately being consciously inclusive as a leader, but it's resonated with a lot of different groups. And she even said, she's like, will you degay the book in the next version? I'm like, no, but I will make sure that our awesome allies know that it's also for them too. She's like, okay, that's fine. So that's kind of the story of Pride Leadership. And it's been really, I've truly enjoyed the experience of sharing my thoughts and ideas and also hearing from people on how they've been impacted by the book. It's, you know, it's won 2 awards so far. The audiobook came out, no pun intended, last summer. Which is, that's a whole other story, which I can share with you how that came about, but that's kind of the story of Pride Leadership.
Yeah. And, like she said, you know, it helps leaders, whether they're straight or gay. So, you know, it's a great model to, kind of live by in the, with those 6, competencies that you've mentioned. So you kind of talked a little bit about keynotes, and so I wanted to transition into that. We're all looking forward to when we can go back to speaking exactly. in person, but you have been doing some trainings and keynotes during the pandemic. Yeah. And what kind of do you have planned for the future in terms of keynotes, and what kind of organizations would you like to speak at?
Yeah. So basically chapter 3 and the foundation of Pride Leadership is all about being a consciously inclusive leader. And obviously that's been a theme for our conversation here today. And that's really where I've been focusing a lot of my energy is, you know, how to help people be more consciously inclusive in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And of course it's in the book, but it doesn't have to be just for queer people anymore, because really it's about allyship and how do I open up wherever I am as a leader to be more inclusive for everyone around me and all of us others, if you will. Even if I'm not one of those others, using bunny ears if you're not being able to see me right now. So I've been working with a lot of Fortune 500 companies, several large not-for-profits, and doing things from the 1 hour, you know, being a consciously inclusive leader story to, you know, like deeper dives, experiences, training. You know, again, because my doctorate's in instructional technology, the world of Zoom and distance learning is not foreign. So we've turned a lot of our content into distance consumable. So, you know, instead of an 8-hour on site, we do, you know, 4 2-hour chunks on Zoom, and we make everything very engaging and highly, not just a, you know, death by PowerPoint or anything of that nature. So, and what's really been fun, and I actually received feedback from clients is, you know, when I do keynotes, they're kind of not the typical keynote because, my cheeky dad humor kind of comes through, which is fun, kind of fun. But there's always like this really in-depth handout that basically is a learner's guide because I'm an educator. That's what I do. And so things at, you know, that people can take away, dive deeper, resources. It's basically like a mini self-paced class if you want it to be. Or you have like you do a meeting 2 weeks later and say, hey, Steve in his conversation gave us this workbook and told us to do like one of these 5 activities. What did you do, team? And it you know, I use the term, it elongates the learning. You know, instead of when I worked for Disney Cruise Line, I would go on board the ship and do what I called a ship dip, meaning I'd go on, dunk the crew in some sort of training, you know, customer service, and I'd run away. And, you know, while that's a nice reminder kind of thing, that's not how humans change behavior. And so having a longer progression of messages, stories, communication, strategies, whatever you have you, makes that learning stick. It's like going to the gym once, I'm not going to get fit. But if I go for like 12 times later, that's really going to change my behavior, make an impact. And that's kind of how I approach the stuff that I do here at Top Dog Learner Group as well.
Yeah. And having that thing to elongate your learning, right? Because we don't want to just have that sit and get, and you know, you're in the session for 2 days, you forget it. So so people who are working with you, then they can maybe have some type of a follow-up you know, session, or you know, you're working with them later, maybe kind of working with small groups, maybe a couple months later and seeing how they're using the tools. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
So I wanted to ask, out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
we all have the ability to create an inclusive space around us, whether that mm-hmm. bubble is tiny or it's massive. And I think it just takes that commitment to, for, and I use the phrase in my keynotes, you have to think in, speak up, and act out. You mm-hmm. think in about yourself first. What am I doing or not doing to be consciously inclusive? What potential unconscious biases maybe do I have, and try to find out those. You can Google Project Implicit is online free assessments to start to explore what potential unconscious biases you have. Speak up is looking at the people around you mm-hmm. and being sure that we're creating a space that is consciously inclusive. And a lot of times in the greater immediate area, it's not engaging in silent collusion, which mm-hmm. is when someone says that disparaging remark and no one around them says anything to refute mm-hmm. it. At that moment, we're all tacitly supporting or silently mm-hmm. supporting that statement. And don't do that. As a leader, that is one of the best ways to undermine your mm-hmm. even most well-intended credibility. Mm-hmm. So when someone says that disparaging remark, don't let it sit there. Find strategies to really refute that. And side note, if you go to topdog.click/mopsam, MOPSAM, I have a free learning to tell you how to do that. It's just kind of like my way to give back. We call it a learning tapas at my business. So feel free to explore the learning tapas. It's a little bite-sized way to beat silent collusion. And then act out is kind of taking that larger step back and looking at the overall workplace, school districts, school, whatever, the bigger picture, if you will, mm-hmm. and say, what are our processes that we're doing that aren't as inclusive? Mm-hmm. Could be things from where are we actually recruiting people? What do the people who we do hire look like? And are they representative of the greater population? Who's in the C-suite or that in the district office? Do they mirror or represent differences for those within the population? Mm-hmm. What about our marketing materials or the images that we're putting out there when we send stuff to whomever? Are they, and I always use the term from a corporate perspective, if I have an image of a senior leader, is it always a middle-aged white dude? That's mm-hmm. the picture mm-hmm. I'm showing out there. Probably not as inclusive as I could be. Or I'm showing an image of families. What kind of families are you showing? Are you being inclusive to show the various types of families that are mm-hmm. out there in the world? So those are kind of the strategies that I would like people to walk away with. The think in, speak up, and act out on ways to be more consciously inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've given me so many tools to share and, great things that you have on your website. And one thing I thought of when you talked about the, marketing materials also for school websites, right? Be mm-hmm. conscious as to what types of pictures of students you're sharing, right? Include all students, yeah. right? And, anything that you're doing yeah. to promote activities on your social media as a school, make sure that you're including all students, right?
So. Yes.
Where can people find you online and connect with you and find out more about what you do?
The best place to go is the main website, topdoglearning.biz, B-I-Z. There you can find, there's all of our online courses, including the free one that I just shared with the MOPSAM. You can find information about my book, the PDF, the audiobook, the hardback book, the signed book, all that fun stuff. Also the other books that I wrote too, which are out there, which are more around learning technology and things of that nature. And there's also ways to get a hold of myself or my team if there's any questions you have or further discussions.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much.